have you state your full name.
John J. Gregory.
And your date of birth?
August 29th, 1913.
And where were you born, John?
Lowell, Oregon.
And your father was a doctor in Lowell?
Yes.
And growing up as a child, having a doctor for a father, did you get to see him very much, or was he quite busy?
He was quite busy, but I got to see him. It's a good thing that he was a doctor, because I broke everything and caught everything and came down the road. I think I'd have broke any other parent.
I remember his sleigh was in Augie Sperling's flower shop for many years. Did you ever get to ride in that sleigh?
Not that one. They had a different one over the law. I rode in it a lot over there, and they used it. What they did over there, along about November, they used to put those old cars up. They'd bring them in and jack them up and put wood under them so they'd be off the ground, the wheels, so the tires wouldn't run. Uh-huh. Then they go to the buggies. And he kept two teams, as I remember, down at a livery stable. And one team was always harnessed. And if he wanted them, he would call and tell them to have the team ready, and they'd bring it out and have it hooked to a buggy, or if it was wintertime, to the cutter, they call them sled. Cutters, what the sleigh is what they called them. And they stayed with that until the spring, and they went back to the buggies again. And then eventually, about the 1st of July, they probably got back to the cars, and the cars were something. They were all overlands.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever hear of an overland?
Yes.
You know, you went about 20 miles and fixed a tire, and then you went a little further.
First cars were kind of mediocre.
Yeah.
Now, you went to school in Willow?
I went to school in Willow and graduated in Willow.
And you graduated in what year?
In 1931.
And what caused your father to move to Union County, LeGrand?
Well, he and another man over there were friends, and they got to talking, I think, about this Hot Lake deal. Some way, I don't know whether a real estate agent approached him or something, because I wasn't there at the time, but anyway, he came over here and had a contract drawn up with an option to purchase Hot Lake with Ada B. Fye. She was the sister-in-law of Dr. Fye. Now, Mark Fye was in Eugene with the University of Oregon as a physician there. There was he and a fellow by the name of Dr. Kenneth Paroli, were the two doctors there. But anyway, he came over here, and Jim Hahn came. There was another physician there, and a fellow by the name of Bill Allen was a druggist, and they had a regular drugstore that had drugs and magazines and all the rest of that stuff. It was just a regular drugstore. And off the side of it, they had a kind of a billiard parlor, and they also had some tennis, table tennis deals. And on back of that was the bathhouse and that area. I used to stay up there when I'd come up from Eugene. I'd stay there for a week during.
You were going to school in Eugene?
I was going to school in Eugene.
Uh-huh.
And I know that I talked to him quite a little bit about this thing, because he told me when he went out there that it was extremely run down. They had to spend a lot of money getting the thing back into shape. And they got a chef out of the Benson Hotel in Portland to come up and be the chef there. And he just went ahead with the surgery, the stuff that they did before. Of course, he had a lot of patients come there from the law to begin with, because they knew him. And then there were a lot of local ones, and then they drew quite a few people from out of the country, and the Union Pacific Railroad stopped there twice a day, you know, with the Portland roads. And that passengers along, took them along. I know one patient that he had was the mayor of Ketchikan, Alaska. He came down there every year he said the reason he came down there is because he had to drink a lot of liquor at the meetings up there in Ketchikan. He came down here to get boiled out. That's just what he stated. But going back on this deal, I think it was about a year and a half when they had the fire. And it started up under the eaves, back in the bathhouse, and somebody coming down the road spotted it, came down and told them it was on fire. And of course they had the good Union County wind, and that started up. Well, the Grand started out to help them, and they got out there about Lone Pine and broke down when they pumped them. The Union came over and others to fight the thing, and they fought the thing there for quite a while. And I was in school at the time, first I knew about it, I picked up the Oregon in the morning and saw a picture of the fire. So I called him up and asked him about it. He said it was pretty well destroyed. They had taken the patients to old Grand Roundup here. And so when I got back up there, I asked him what he was going to do, and he said, well, he said that he had an option to purchase it. But in that option, he had a contract written that A to B Fire would keep insurance on these buildings, which she did not do. So he said, I'm not going to exercise my option because it's going to take a lot to clean this place up. So he moved out then, and he and Hahn came to the Grand and opened up practice down there on 4th Street.
But when you were working out at Hot Lake, what were your duties? What did you do?
I didn't do a whole lot of anything, kind of bellboy, whatever they could get at that age when they could catch me.
You had to meet the train,
yeah,
and pick up the mail.
They had two or three of us that were supposed to do it. There was a boy by the name of Bill Henderson who used to be here with one of them. And there was a cousin of mine, Carl Bonner. He used to be in, and I was the third one, and I usually tried to disappear someplace. I had other things I'd rather do at that time.
I can appreciate that. Well, it was going to try and be operated kind of like it was before when they said it was the Mayo Clinic of the
West.
Yeah,
they were going to go, I don't know what great extent they'd gone to, but they were doing real well. He was doing quite a little surgery at home. And they had well filled up with patients. The thing was going along good until the fire.
Had they tried to continue the meals that they used to serve there?
Yeah, they had this chef in the Benson Hotel, and they had a restaurant there just above the lobby.
Do you remember kind of the prices that were the meals cost?
Not at this time.
A lot of people used to come out to LeGrand for Sunday dinner.
Sunday dinner was a big deal out there. And of course they had the thing was open for three meals a day for the patients or anybody there. Of course they served trays to patients that weren't mobile enough to get down. And
they operated the dairy.
They had a fellow by the name of Virgil McGraw that he brought over from Malawi that operated the dairy. That's another thing. They had a heck of a time putting that barn back in order. It was a first class mess inside up there, but they got it cleaned up and went on with that. And
they more or less raised all the things that they sold through the restaurant?
Well, to a certain extent, yes. They had, I know they had down below, way down more towards where they got that trailer park, just this side of there, they had bunch of hogs down there, and then I think they had a few head of beef cattle around there that this McGraw took care of, and they probably sent them someplace like they do now and have them butchered and then bring the meat back and cut it up and put it in cold storage like they do.
When your father and Dr. Hahn decided to come back and be in LeGrand, what were you doing? Did you graduate from college?
No, I was still in school then, but I came back up here and they opened up down there. I think Hahn bought that deal on 4th Street down there. And Dad leased the back end of it from Jim Horn. They didn't have anybody in the front of that thing, as I recall it at that time. It was just he and Horn, and they worked back and forth together on surgery and stuff like that. One of them had to be gone, the other one covered for them. They did most of their patients went to St. Joe.
Uh-huh.
So that was good.
You mentioned about 1934, then you bought the Ford dealership from Cy Perkins.
1936. Yeah, I bought it from Cy Perkins.
And he was the Ford dealer at that time here in LeGrand.
Yeah. He was just getting out. I didn't know it, but he was just getting out. He had Ford it out around, and he was getting out, but I was a dealer. So I took over the dealership up in Enterprise. They had what they call a second depression. You know, it was quite a struggle up there.
I can appreciate it. When cars were delivered to you, how were they delivered?
Most of them are brought in on these truck trailer deals. And
uh-huh.
I'll tell you another thing. There was no stopping Ford. If they wanted to get rid of them, you better shut your eyes. I had 34 of them in barns up there one time in Mohawk County. And I got a hold of a zone manager and told him I wanted some help getting those damn things out of the lockup. So we got together with him and we got these cars out of there. They did a lot of crazy things. Now, for instance, one time, they'd ship the things that weren't all over.
Uh-huh.
And they shipped me a Lincoln up there. What would you do with a Lincoln in Mohawk County? So I got...
And you were a regular franchise dealer?
Yeah, I was a regular franchise dealer. I was supposed to, if I sold a Lincoln, talk to Chauncey before I sold it. That was a deal. But he didn't pay any attention to that. I knew him well enough that it wouldn't have been any deal. In fact, one time my dad wanted a Ford Coupe, and I sent him over to Chauncey to buy it because Chauncey happened to have one in stock that fit what he wanted. That was just before World War II started. I know he drove that coupe all the way through World War II. I don't know, it had about 150,000 miles on it.
You didn't make dealer transfers like we did later on.
Yeah, you mean trace? Yeah, that's the way I got rid of those 34 that they shipped them. And another thing, you could go to if a dealer had one like they do now, you could call him up and see if he'd turn loose on it. You could go get it for a customer that wanted it.
What did the dealer charge you? So much over invoice?
No, they usually just sent them out invoice flat.
Just did invoice?
Get rid of it. That's what they were trying to do. There wasn't much market, really.
Well, there's a question I would like to know, and if you know, why did Cy Perkins moved from the Sturgill building, there where the video store is, over to the Grandy building?
You mean the one I knew him, he was where the video store is,
right.
And Claire had a Buick agency in one corner there.
Uh-huh.
Remember that?
Yes.
And then Cy had a Dodge agency in the front end there.
Yes.
Now when he moved, he moved just catty-cornered across the street.
Well, he was the Ford dealer at that building where the video store is now.
Well, he'd gotten out of Ford for that.
Well,
he may have had some left.
There's a picture in 1934 showing him being the Ford dealer, and then he sold the Chauncey in, was it 38?
I don't think he ever sold a Chauncey. Somebody else was in there as a dealer between the two.
We have a picture of Cy and Claire and all the employees, including...
Paul Bull?
Well, I think Keffer.
Paul Bull was his parts man. Now, when I bought him out in Enterprise, he sent Paul up to help me get started. But Paul didn't like Enterprise. We had winters up there then, I mean real good ones. So Paul came back to Grand. I believe that Chauncey quit Ford when he moved across the street. He may have had some left to sell.
Well, what I'm saying is in 34, he was the Ford dealer at the video store. Then he went over in the Grandy building.
Which one's the Grandy building?
Was where Max Park is.
Oh, yeah. That's where I...
He was the Ford dealer there.
Yeah.
And I have a picture of a 36 Ford, and I was under the impression that he sold to Chauncey about 1938 and then moved back as the Dodge
dealer. He told me that he was, well, I know that this was what happened, because it happened in Portland. I went down to a dealer's meeting, and they'd had trouble with the brakes on those 37s.
Uh-huh.
And we had to repair all the brakes, and they didn't give you anything for labor, but they sent the parts out for the brakes, and what they'd done, they got a real slick deal that wouldn't grab. And they'd just slide over, and one wheel would catch and the other would catch, and they had a lot of trouble with the thing. We had to replace the brakes on all those things. And Chauncey was out of that when that happened, because that was in 37. And I think that he had gone back across the street then to where the video store is, and shortly after, Claire opened up the Buick dealer.
Uh-huh. Well, then...
I could be wrong on the, you know, yeah, on the time deal. That's been a long time ago.
So you then sold a dealership up at Enterprise and came back to LeGrand and...
Well, I came to Wallow.
You came to Wallow.
Yeah, I was in Wallow for about 7 years before I ever came back to LeGrand.
And you came back to LeGrand in what year was that again?
46.
46?
46. And I bought Chauncey out again. I mean, Cy out again. He had this ranch out here.
Uh-huh.
I bought him out again.
I always heard that there were a lot of alkali in that ground around the airport out there. How did you overcome that?
On the parts that I'm on, you got to go out there and kind of... What it was, and a lot of it showed up too after the flood. You remember the flood that we had
here? The one in 64, 65.
Yeah, that one went through right through town.
Uh-huh.
Now it wouldn't come where I was because we got the highway through there. Then back to the dam, we'd probably go over and wash the UP out at a truck stop out there. But at that time, I got all that water in there.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know whether, I don't recall any great amount of alkali, except that after that thing, once in a while, we'd dig up a chunk of it. You can do anything with that ground as long as you've got fertilizer and water.
Well, that's a good thing to know.
Yeah. Where we're right now, I'm not active in it anymore. Neil Cooper, do you know him?
That's your son-in-law?
Yeah. Well, he's in it, and he's got a contract with the potato people. You drive up the lane out there, and you'll see we've got about 100 acres of spuds in it. It's just, they're going to... Monday they're going to start in, they'll spray them with sulfuric acid and kill them. And then 2 weeks later they'll do it. But those all go for seed. And they're going to do more of it, as I understand it. And I'm out of it, as far as I'm concerned. I've had all of it. I ran cattle. Cy had that thing out there, and he got the ranch from him, and he also had a permit up here in Five Points for cattle. And I operated that.
Where you run cattle up
at 5 points. I'll tell you one thing. I heard the other day they were talking about this road they're putting in out there, and I didn't know along. It goes into Island City, up past the country club. In 46, I think 46, I know it was in 47 too, I drove 200 head of cows, 200 head of calves, and 10 bulls down there, through Island City, across the bridge, down the Blackhawk Trail, and up on towards 5 points. And after that, they pulled all the fences out on the Blackhawk Trail, and the guy that had the sale yard had a bunch of yearlings. Remember the old stockyards he used to have down there? Well, he unloaded these yearlings down there and started driving in out there. Boy, I mean, they blistered him. I think it cost him $1,500 for him to go through.
He got in people's yards. Women were shaking their...
That was always a joy, you know, some woman come out with an apron. All it took.
Well, some of these regulations, we'd still be back in Missouri. We wouldn't have got out here on the Oregon Trail, would we?
You know, the thing, another thing that I can remember back in that period is how much snow we had in Grand. You remember it stacking up in the streets there?
You couldn't see clear across the street.
No.
It would be so hot.
Yeah, and the wind would blow. You didn't know whether you were getting out of town or in town and where you were half the time.
Well, what did you think? Ed Ford was the city manager during that time. Did you get along with Ed?
No, I didn't. Got right into him. We had a big fat... I had an irrigation ditch that came through town and still comes through town called the Irrigation Canal Company. And it was leaking down there, and there was a lot of railroad tracks where they parking these school buses now. There was a great big pond, and it was about 12 feet deep. And I went in and told that guy, I wanted to talk to him. And he said, get out of my office. So I went down and got a hold of Harry Waddell.
Yeah.
Lynn Anderson. Took them up there and showed them what it was, and I said, you can go from there. And eventually they sent Mr. Ford down the road. He was, he thought he was God or something, as far as I know. And he could get along.
We worried about mechanical sewer in those days. When the mechanical sewer, you know, when we'd have too much water, we'd have to go through that ditch that went out toward Geckler's there. Is that the ditch you're talking about?
If that thing wasn't turned on, I'd tell you some stories.
Worried us considerably. Yeah. We're afraid that some farmer's children would get typhoid or something out there. And you had so much water, you couldn't stop it.
No. Remember they had old George Judy down there?
Yes.
Taking care of the deal all the time. I used to go up and see old George, every time I'd know there was a head coming through, I'd go tell him, George, you better get ready, because you're coming. Another thing happened on that thing. It was in a tin sewer that went down the alley, you know.
Between Adams and Jefferson.
Yeah, right behind those buildings.
Right.
And that thing, when it got that flood, broke. And flooded a lot of that down there. And that's, I went to the city manager, it was a different guy, wasn't his name Clausen there?
Yes. Well, I guess it was Clausen that time.
Well, anyway, I took him down there and showed him what was going on. And so he, some way they got it worked around and they put sewer line tear down Jefferson. Another problem was the underpass. You remember that?
Right. Filled up with water.
Oh, yeah. Filled up the water with level. They didn't have a good pump on the other side to take it away. So I got all that worked out. One thing I did for granted.
Well, wasn't George Cochran and Cole Everhart, weren't they, didn't they have something to do with the ditch company? Weren't they attorneys?
Yes, George Cochran was the attorney. I'll tell you something that happened there. Turn that damn thing off, man. I'll tell you something.
Well, there was some interesting things happened around LeGrand that probably been swept under the rug.
Got in on several of them on the edges of the ground with these water deals.
Did you remember that old dog catcher we had, Joe Southall? He used to have that old white horse.
Yeah, I remember something.
Painted the hooves orange. And he lived in a tent in that old barn down there where the mechanical sewer was, where Pepsi-Cola is now.
Yeah.
He always picked up dogs around town. The kids had left the dogs out.
He'd pick them up. Old George Judy was the one that I had more to do with than any of them about that time.
Did you ever play golf with George?
Yeah.
He was quite a golfer, wasn't he?
He had a boy that was a bellhop down in Portland. I used to see him once in a while when I go to Portland. Old George was a good golfer. I don't know after, that thing got so bad that we formed a committee, you remember that? And went into this deal out here where they put the sewer line out there to the two ponds. Yeah, except they never did run it the way it was supposed to been run. They were only supposed to fill one pond.
Uh-huh.
And they were supposed to oxidize out, but instead play that when they got into it, where they filled both ponds. Now they've taken it clear out past Hot Lake. You hear that, didn't you?
Yes, they clear out there close to the Courtwrights out there.
Yeah, it's on the other side of the river.
Well, your dad had a barn out there where he had those real nice horses that he had.
That burned.
Yeah, I remember that.
Then we moved on over to the ranch and remodeled the building inside for that building.
Milo Staker took some pictures of the horse out there. I remember real nice pictures. That's when Joe Bob was his trainer.
Yeah, Joe Bob was here about 3 years, and then he took off. He went first to Oregon City, and then he went back to Missouri. That's where he came from, was Mexico, Missouri. He stayed there for a long time. He was there about 20 years before he ever came back out there.
Back?
What brought him back to the East? I don't know how he got into California. And he was schooling runners out of why he got fooling with runners, I'll never know, but they were coming out of those cages, you know, they got from the runners. One of them fell with him, tipped over and broke his shoulder and stepped on his hand.
Oh.
When he got over that, I guess he decided he'd better come back to the ranch. You know, he was married to Millie all that time, too.
I didn't know when they got married.
Yeah, they got married before he ever left here. In fact, she moved down to Oregon City with him, and he moved down there, and then he took off, and she came back up here with three kids.
Well, it was a time. I know you had one daughter, Jean.
Mm-hmm. I got another one, too, over in Milwaukee.
Jean taught school.
Yeah. Still teaching.
She used to come down to the public library where my wife was a children's librarian. And you use the library a lot yourself.
Yeah, we do. We don't go out much anymore, of course. We're 90 years old, so we stay in and we read in the evening and stuff like that. There isn't much to watch on the tube after you've seen the news, as you well know.
I appreciate it.
So that's the way we fill in part of our time. We go over to Lyle County. I got that daughter over there. She's married to Sam Wade.
Uh-huh.
You know where that rocky point is around between Austin and Enterprise, where you've got all the wire to keep the rocks from falling on the road?
I think, yeah.
Well, her ranch is just across the river. Three grandkids in that group. Two of them are nurses. One of them is an anesthetist up at the Lyle Hospital.
Uh-huh.
And the other, the boy, is an engineer down in Los Angeles, a building engineer. He stays down there. And then the other younger one, she's also a nurse.
I know my wife said she was impressed with your daughter's room up at the school. When she went up there, she had her picture when she went to Central School, and she had her class there to show them that she was the same age in that school, and now she was their teacher.
Gee, they've got two kids. One of them, Derek Cooper, with the Forest Service down at John Day. In fact, Neil Cooper went down there tonight to see them. And then the girl's name is Carrie, and she's married to Tim Mottram, and they live over in Nampa. And the other one went over to Nampa.
Well, living out there by the airport, things, what do you think of all the changes that's been made?
Oh, they're all right. They make a few more of them. It wouldn't hurt some of the other roads they need a little work back there.
Yeah.
There's more traffic out of that airport all the time, you know. I've had two planes down on me killed. One of them, the guy forgot to put in gasoline.
Old
deal went down. And the other one was a spray pilot bringing a spray plane from Seattle to Baker. And they told him he had enough gas to get some, and he didn't have, so he circled and came into my field. And he'd been all right, except he had an irrigation ditch. And he fixed that one up there. Then there was a man and a wife were out there. They were going to Portland, and he just didn't warm his plane up, I don't think. He took off right down due north, and he got down there and made a quick turn, and his thing quit on him, and went right down the side of the tree, killed him both. We'll get some more of them in due time.
Yeah.
Have you been out there? They've got all the old Island City Road out there that enlarged the runway. They're going to work on that next.
I understood that they were going to work on out there. What do you think the industrial park out there with the trailers and the safe company? And
oh, they're all right. I had a little row with one of them they had out there, but it wasn't anything. They had a fellow out there with a spray plane. And we were working cattle, and he came in and buzzed us, and the cattle told the crawl. We had a little row over that, but other than that, the rest of it's all right. And I don't think they'll ever get down that corner again, and I think that's going to be the extension according to the runways.
Well, I noticed all those mounds of dirt out there.
Well, they got them all leveled down, most of them now. And what they're supposed to do is go on way on that other road, you know where the trailer factory is?
Uh-huh.
Go down and cross that road down there. And they are taking the man's ranch there and going right through where his house is to put that runway in.
Hmm.
And the road's going to go out around like that. If they ever get to doing that, that's what they're talking about. They talked to me first about coming through that.
Cattle to your summer. Well, he doesn't do any cattle.
We did for a while.
We did for
about
a while.
2 years ago we quit.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to fool with him anymore. We were pasturing at the river up here on the lawyer's land from Bend. And about 2 years ago, I think it was, we quit. John Collins has that pasture now. So we're mostly, he has raising crops, wheat, potatoes deal, you know, you lease to them.
Uh-huh.
All you do is furnish the water, really.
Yeah.
So they do all the work and everything is pretty good back in time.
As long as it pays all the bills,
yeah,
that's the way to do it. I've been out visiting with Willie Hammond out there.
Yeah.
With all the mint, the wheat, the grass seed, and he's got a real versatile.
Yeah, he's got a lot of diversity.
Farm out there.
Do you remember his father?
No, I knew Charlie Hammond, you know, and of course Taylor, Laura Taylor, was married to G.W. and used to go out there all the time when I was a kid.
Willie's father had scales there in Island City. And they've torn them down now, but he had these scales. I used to have to weigh stuff over there. And we got to know the elderly gentleman very well. Of course, I know Willie, too.
Well, it's right there where that barn is.
Yeah.
Where the scales were. But, Willie's dad was a pretty tough.
Yeah, he was a character.
Willie learned a lot of good things from him.
Yeah.
Because he worked hard and seems to be quite successful.
Yeah, Willie's got a pretty good deal going on.
What are the biggest changes in the valley you think that have happened?
I think the fact that they're going into diverse cropping. One thing, they all used to be all wheat. Grains, and now they're grazing other things like potatoes and mint, beets, that'll be the next thing. Lots of
sugar
beets.
Beet.
Lots of sugar beet. Now that went on years ago, that land that I had was sugar beet land, originally, because an outfit from California had it. But they closed up the old sugar beet factory, used to be down where the first county shops were.
Down on Z.
Yeah. They closed up after that. In fact, I think Cy bought some of that land when he put that thing together. He put that together. He bought a fellow by the name of Grout, another one out there, and then I think he got some of this land off that.
Well, that was all financed local by different people in the valley, as I understood it.
Yeah.
And it went from 1898 to about 1906. I heard that it was because of the blight, they quit sugar beets.
Could be. But
then the
sprays would take care of that.
Yeah. Well, they said that also was labor intensive because you had to hoe it.
Yeah.
They hadn't been used to that. They planted the wheat harvest in the fall.
Of course, it's all changed quite a bit now. They just get on a tractor and set to go through the rows and clean out the road and everything.
Well, last night I was talking to Laverne Draper, and he was saying that Ed McCants had a plow that would go 4.5 foot deep, but it stopped the tractor and mixed a lot of forest waste and stuff. But
we did the same thing on a piece out there. A fella came in here from Ontario, had the plow. Now that plow is as tall as that deal there. It's still sitting out there. If you want it, I'll give it to you. I've been trying to get that character to get it out of there. But it's sitting out there, and it must be fully that high.
Uh-huh.
And what they did, they plowed, and then they put a lot of moisture cascading waste into that, buried it deep. It's buried probably about 6 or 7 feet down.
Which made the ground productive after that.
Very well, fine, yeah.
Well, there's been a lot of changes that way.
I'll tell you another thing that's a big change, the fact that they're using wells.
Uh-huh.
They've gotten away from the Grand Round River, which is nothing to begin with. When you try to irrigate out of that thing, you might as well forget it. There isn't enough water in that thing at the times you want it. So they're all going to wells. We put in a well here about 3 or 4 years ago, but there's other wells going in around us all the time. Paul Rutt's got a couple.
Bill Cooper didn't do too well.
No. Torkelson was another one that had one. He just died here the other day. There, another thing, too, they can, if they get the right kind of a rotary drill deal, they'll put a well down 300 feet in a day and a half.
That's pretty fast.
All they got to do is have a little water for the rotary.
I didn't know they did it that fast.
That's pretty fast.
Well, when they drained the water from out there of the old Pierce place, did that change the water table?
Oh, I think the water table changed. I had a fellow work for me when I was running cattle out there, and he came from Union. And he told me that he used to row a boat from Union to Hot Lake and back. There wasn't much water.
I'm sure you knew Pete.
Oh yeah, I knew Pete.
R.B. Davis.
Richard and I were on a, I was a president of the Cattlemen's Association, and he and Heber Glenn were the two others on the committee when I was running cattle one time. So I knew Richard very well. And I knew Pete, but not as well as I knew Richard. Did you ever know Heber Glenn?
Yes. When he had the beaver out there.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I don't know how many people would believe what happened.
Well, it's just like all those things. I'd seen a similar deal in Malawi County. They were raising foxes over in Malawi County. They got them right up to almost the pelting stage, and they got some type of pneumonia. I know they got asked my dad to come down and see, look at them, see if they could do anything. Well, they couldn't. They started dying just like flies, and the same thing happened pretty much, I think, up there at Heber on the field. And when you put those animals that are, should run in the wilds in confinement, you're going to get, just like humans jammed up in a place, you're getting into trouble. You remember Heber had it up behind the house?
Oh, the house there. Well, the concrete pieces are still up there.
Well,
I
think that's pretty much what happened.
Didn't they sell those for about $1,800
yeah, Did you ever know Boots? Boots Walnum?
I knew Boots, yes.
Well, Boots bought a pair of them, and I told him that's what he did.
Well, that baker was selling them.
Yeah.
But, I know a lot of different people bought them.
Now, I got my education on those things before I left for Lock County. Anytime they get them together, they're going to get a flu or a pneumonia or something and die like flies. And they get it. The same thing will happen to pigs if they're too close to confined sometimes.
We at one time had a lot of pigs in this valley, too.
Yeah, I know. If they don't have any, I raised a lot of pigs over the Lock County.
This, Money Carnes still have?
I don't know. If last I knew he was, but I don't know. And that's another thing. They're all still trying to do it in the confinement. Over there, we didn't confine the things. We let them, put hog rings in the nose, you know, to keep them from rooting. And we had fences that they'd stay in the general area. And we'd feed them a little grain so we knew where they were. And one time, we did this. They were on that hill back of Lally called Tick Hill. Back of there, there's a lot of wheat land up there, and they were raising wheat in those old combines that put half of it in the bin and the other half on the ground. We rented some land from up there and took the hogs up there and branded them just like cattle on the hips and turned them loose. What we did, we put up kind of a corral with troughs in it, and we fed them before we ever turned them loose. All we had to do was get up there and call those things, and they'd come in from wherever they were to eat again. So that's how we got it back down on there again.
Well, that's cool. Well, I've seen pictures of some hogs that they were 750 pounds.
Yeah.
Why did they ever raise animals that heavy?
I don't know. None of them were any good. If you get a sow that heavy, 9 times out of 10, she'll lay on her offspring and kill half of them.
What's the average weight of a hog?
We tried to ship at around 220 pounds. Now, we had to ship a rail in out on the Lyle. We drove them down by foot. We put them in the rails down there where Roman Hicks had their mill. And they went out of there, and they had one man handle all the livestock in that end of the valley, and another one up around Joseph had handled all the livestock up there, and they kept in correspondence by phone with each other, and then they'd send these trains up there, and they'd start loading at Joseph, and they'd bring them back down to Milan and load them out, send these cattle, hogs, and the whole works. We used to ship our hogs into Bodine and Clark, and they were the ones that marketed our hogs for us. I'll tell you another thing. Once in a while, you barely make enough money to pay the freight on the damn hog.
I've heard that.
And my father got into a deal over there in Lyle County. It was a real cracker. He had a fellow working for him, and he got the idea that they could make them in if they raised ducks and shipped them down to about the time they had Chinese New Year. So he got all these ducks, and he had several kids, and I remember those poor kids were chasing those ducks up and down every irrigation out there on the ranch, keeping them from getting away. So finally they got around to Chinese New Year, and they got consolidated and brought in a bunch of cages, and they put these ducks in them and shipped them out. First shipment went pretty good. Second shipment was a little slower. The third one, they got to call him up and down there and said, don't ship any more ducks, you flooded the market. And that wound up the duck. I never will forget those kids trying to crawl off the ground.
When you said you were in the cattle men's association, were you instrumental in forming the...
No, I haven't been formed before I was there.
What all was involved in that?
Oh, a lot of them were watching out for range rights and stuff like that. You know, they were beginning to nip it. I got in, turned that thing off, and I'll tell you a story. Oh, not fighting the Sierra Club necessarily, but we had deals trying to keep those range rights for different ones around the country and try to help them on that.
And then later, they wanted to fence the creeks away from the cattle.
Yeah.
Cattle have to get water.
Yeah.
It And when you own your own property,
kind of a lot of crazy things.
Well, I don't know, Jack. Things have changed over the years.
You know, when I started, everybody had herd cattle. These buyers decided that they'd rather have the Angus. So everybody had to turn over to raise Angus cattle. That's what they wanted to find. Angus, they'd buy the white pieces, but they discount them.
Then they went, they want leaner,
leaner
beef and all these different things. Anything that they want, it changes all the time.
Yeah, they're even having some rows now over these places where they pen them up and then feed them grain. Just
feedlot.
The feedlot deal. There's a big one over in Malua.
Yeah. I don't know how they expect the farmers to feed the people if they keep putting regulations on them. And then the farmer doesn't get anything for his product. The middlemen are getting all the profit.
Yeah.
What has happened with this association of cattlemen that were going to have their own slaughterhouse?
I don't think they ever got enough push behind it. They don't know. They're still talking about it. But I think too, the fellow was instigating it a little bit. He was the president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. He got out of office, kind of drifted down. I don't know what they're doing now. Do you know John Collins, realtor?
Yes.
John has been president. I don't know what to do now.
I didn't know he was involved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's got cattle.
So he's got real estate?
Cattle. Sell your car or sell your house?
Farmers out in the valley said, you know, they hate to be the generation to lose the family farm. And, it's a tough business.
Sure it is.
By the time you pay the taxes,
there's all kinds of operational costs. If you got any hired help, you have to be with the state to take care of them in case they're injured. And a lot of things have changed too in the cattle deal now. You know, they used to rope them neck and foot, stretch them out, do all this. Now they've got what they call calf cradles to put them in. They just tip them over most of them. It's a lot easier, I can tell you that. I've been both ways. I've been kicked by a lot of them.
I can appreciate that.
One of my worst experiences was these young cows up in the hills running into a porcupine, these calves.
Oh.
And they get a face full of quills, and you got to drive the mother and the calf about 5 miles to a corral where you can catch him and pull the quills out. Every step of the way, he's trying to nurse and she's trying to keep his head off.
Yeah.
So I'd better say what I have to do with the porcupine.
Well, they said that that was supposed to be an animal that a person lost out in the woods could kill and survive. How can you do it with all those quills?
I want a sharp knife before I get around that. I'm going to do that. I'm going to have to do it with them. I just soon starve to death. We used to have a lot of bear up there when we first started, but Harvey Carter wound them up. He got up there and started trapping them, you know, and got them out of the ground.
No.
You know Arvington?
Yes. He was my seventh grade teacher. He was my babysitter when I was two. Yeah. He was the bellhop at the Foley Hotel, and my mother worked at the Green Parrot Cafe, and he'd watch me up in the room to see I was all right while she was working. But well, bellhop.
I knew Harvey, of course. I was on the school board for a while. I met Harvey walking around up there. He always had a long staff that he took with him, walked with him. He walked everywhere, all over that country. And he got started on those bears, and they really went with each other.
Well, he was quite a cattleman, too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He running up there where the old Grand Mound Lumber Company,
above,
between Upper and Lower Prairie.
It's a good thing they didn't build a golf course up there. Boy, those elk have been down there and cleaned them out. I often thought if that guy ever puts up that in, he'd better sit up there with a shotgun in the wintertime.
Well, the Indians were saying to destroy the artifacts. Any artifact that was there was, and there was not an Indian alive that knew about when that there's been a mill there since the 1800s.
Yeah, you know, they used to have a dam there.
Yes.
Quite a country and quite a change.
Well, would you go into farming today?
I got tired of trying to deal with Ford Motor Company and the general public in Ohio County. I had my choice of the two. I'd go back to the farm. I'll tell you one thing. You're going to run out of farmers someday. And if they keep on moving around, they're going to run out of farmland.
Yeah. Well, people are going to have to eat.
Yeah.
Realize you're going to have to give a little bit on some of these
regulations. Like this potato outfit out here, what they do, they don't use these spuds here at all. This is all seed spuds. And they've got, I think it's 7,000 acres of Winnemucca that they seed to raise the regular spuds. And they got 14,000 over at Hermiston.
Oh, in the circles?
Yeah, under circles at both places. And then last year, I think they even shipped some seed from far back in Minnesota because they had a drought or something like that all back there.
Is this this Lane Brothers?
Lane?
Lane Brothers? Excuse me.
No, this isn't them. This is an outfit by the name of Offit.
Oh.
No, Lane's raising potatoes out there, but I don't know much about them. They're down by Brashotti. I know Bob and Pat, but I don't know the Lanes very well.
The Lanes have that spot on the other side of the Hot Lake Bridge.
I think they're probably raising theirs for food, I mean, to sell.
Well, over the years, there's been several farmers not making out of the valley. And, my gosh, for one reason or another, some of the better farmers around is Stan Weisauer, sons, Willie Hammond.
Yeah.
You probably know more of them than I do.
All the Rudd's another one. He's a good farmer.
Right.
I think getting on down the line there is Case, Green DeLint, that bunch. I don't know too much about it. Like I say, for the last year or so, I'm just not very active anymore. I go out to my place and do what I want to out there, but I don't wander around too much anymore.
Did you think when they built particle board out there and military industries and stuff that was using up some of the better farmland in the valley?
Oh, I think they're getting just as much out of what they got there with Terry and that bunch as they did with the farmland. They've got a lot of farmland, a lot of farmland. I think that that'll give more employment and some stuff like that. One thing, these farmers don't hire any more labor anymore than they have to.
No. One good thing they have done for the farmers is they came along with mechanized equipment.
Yeah.
And they were able to do some of these jobs a lot easier than they
would. No, when I started the law, we stacked all loose hay. We used overshot stackers, teams of horses with buck rigs. I never saw it until I started to move over here. The latter part of 46, I had a lot of hay over there. And Alan Courtright, Burke Courtright, and their sister came over there at the bale and bailed a bunch of hay up for me so I could move it over here. That's about the first time I ever watched a bale.
Well, the Beesing brothers out there used to stack their hay.
Yeah.
I can remember they were feeding off of wagons with the rubber tires when I was a kid.
Well, when old Sly had that thing before I got there, no more of his county agent, I can't remember his name, but he told him that he wanted to get total usage out of hay to chop. So they chopped the hay, put it in the wagon, and then they started over toward the airport where they were going to feed and the wind blew. You know what happened? I know because Dick Smooches
gave
these cattle for
him. I can appreciate it.
Chopped hay in the air.
Do you think if they put some windmills out there on that hill, like a hot lake, that
I'd like to see them do it, yeah. And just to see what it'll do. I think it'll work. You get a lot of wind.
The wind really blows out there.
Yeah. Yeah, we get a lot of wind down there by that airport. Oh, that won't look bad.
Right.
I take two caps. I take a cap and a half. And the wind's blowing where the cap and the other ones are where the half.
Well, it's blowing some trains off the track out there.
Yeah, that hot lake, it blew one off up to the blew a car off up there one time.
Yeah.
And there were out there.
But it makes a very interesting valley to live in that way.
Yeah.
We were talking the other day about when they cut down the tree out there, Lone Tree.
Yeah.
Do you remember when that was?
No, I don't. Boy, it's either call it Lone Tree or Lone Pine when I do it, and I never knew when they took it down. I know when we were talking about that fire, that the pumper from the Graham broke down at Lone Pine.
Well, I think it's it says on the railroad building there, Lone Tree.
Yeah.
And Lone Pine, I think, is the right designation. George Lorenzo owned that property one time right there, where you turn off to the airport. Remember when the Junior Chamber of Commerce tried to have that car races out there where B&K Auto is now?
Yeah, I'm past that. I've never been much of a watching car races.
Well, it was just a town project. We worked awful hard out there. Seems like the Junior Chamber of Commerce used to do a lot of things around town to make things a little bit better.
You got a polo field out there now, you know. Have you been out there yet?
Yes.
I don't know how it's doing. I haven't been over. I thought I'd go over sometime.
There's not too much advertisement to know it. Well, who would have the money to be able to...
Well, the lawyer's the one that's pushing it.
What lawyer is that?
Oh, Joseph, Steve Joseph.
Oh, Steve?
Yeah, Melissa's the power behind the picture.
Oh.
They had the old stable. I had leased it there from Harry Coleman for a while, didn't he? moving him out for some reason.
Well, you know, we used to have so many game birds and things in the valley, and we don't hardly have any since...
Coyotes took care of that.
Coyotes and didn't...
We got coyotes out there. We'll say two or three of them every so often.
Well, I'm sure they... But I was thinking maybe the brush, that there wasn't the cover for them anymore.
There's a lot of cover for them out there now, and they're in the potatoes. They'll probably get out there Monday because they're going to spray them myself very fast.
Oh, but, boy.
There's a lot of them along that old ditch there. We see them all the time. We hear them. You don't want to hear them. Go out there about dark and just start tuning up.
You ever do any hunting for pheasants?
Yeah, when I first came here. But I've over a while. I was along the Lyle River there. And yeah. Lots of pheasants over there, and they just brought too many out here. Joe Bob and I took one of Neil Cooper's dogs and went pheasant hunting one time. We walked about a mile along that ditch, and we didn't get birds up. The little dog looked at us and turned around and ran back and got the pick up. She had it all up. She said, oh, it's looking at those. But there's a few birds out there, don't you?
Yeah, well, they used to go up the hill there behind Spoots's, you know.
Yeah.
Boy, you had to be a pretty good runner to get the...
That was a lot of Hungarians in that area.
Spoots Brothers was a real going concern when they were farming the hillside there.
Most of them all gone now.
Well, they all are.
I remember old D driving cattle. They'd come out of up there in the hills, not far well where Dale Stanley's was, bringing cattle down through here around about the 1st of November down this street here, around the hillside and on out to this place. Try that now.
Yeah.
It wouldn't last very long.
But you know, we were doing that a lot of years before all those houses built up through there. And I remember when it was in the paper and Roy Skeen used to run.
Yeah, well, Ralph Badgley bought 150 heads of hay one time. I don't know where he kept them in the winter, but I know it was down here someplace. But he got tired of them real quick. I bought them back for him. I knew Ralph pretty well.
Well, they were some real...